Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dan Assall Show, inspiring and insightful conversations with trade show, exhibition and conference professionals. Be notified first about new episodes by hitting the follow button and visit the YouTube channel to watch episodes of the show and enjoy bonus content. The Dan Assall Show is supported by headline sponsor Jonas Event Technology, an award-winning event registration supplier for organisers of trade shows, exhibitions and conferences. The show is also supported by exhibition organisers Terrapin and 19 Group, and its official charity partner is Rays of Sunshine, the UK charity who brightens the lives of seriously ill young people and their families by granting wishes and providing ongoing support within hospitals. Hello and welcome to the show, Amy Baker. How are you doing, Amy?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
So I can actually see on, is that a chalkboard or like an old school blackboard? For those that are watching that might be not of a certain age, I remember that gives me sort of chills of my maths lessons from the mid-90s.
Well, you are going back a bit.
I know, I am. I can see there a pie. So I should say that, Amy, you are the CEO of the pie. So that's a good segue. We're going to talk about a whole host of topics. But to start off with, for those that aren't aware, maybe you can just summarise what the pie is, please.
Yes. Well, the pie, I'm looking at the logo now, it does look a little bit like the Trivial Pursuit game.
Another 90s reference, or 80s.
I'm the same age. The pie is a weird sounding company name, but everyone remembers it, and it actually stands for Professionals in International Education. So I conceived of the pie as a media and recruitment company. It became an events company soon after, but it was for anyone working in international education, which is one of those clandestine industries that you don't know about unless you work in it, which is essentially facilitating the international global flow of students. So anyone who wants to study in another country, whether that's short-term language course or undergrad or MBA, if you're doing it in another country, you're an international student and it's an export. And that's what we cover.
Okay, fantastic. I want to sort of go all the way back, maybe past even when the business was set up, which I think was over a decade ago, not to age anybody. I know, and I not through fantastic investigative journalism, but through your LinkedIn profile, that you did a journalism with sociology degree at university. I'm interested to know what inspired you to start the business. So maybe you can just sort of take us back, you know, and why maybe you thought actually, maybe when you were younger or at university, whether you always thought you were going to become a founder of a business. So give us that journey, please.
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been asked that before. And the answer is actually definitely not. I mean, I never particularly thought I'd be an entrepreneur until I guess spied the opportunity. And it's a little bit of a story of opportunity and frustration, sort of into some nice combustive elements, which meant I felt forced to set my own company up. And that's more a story of being a female entrepreneur as well and having children. But I spent a year abroad in France studying how to be a journalist in French. So that's sort of the origin of me and what I was interested in. And then I found myself working for this even more niche industry as an editor, which was for language schools globally, reading this magazine and a term which is education agents, which is not very descriptive, but companies in Brazil, South Korea, Italy, Spain, who are sending students to study English, let's say in Brighton for the summer. That's a huge industry, which is another industry which you don't really know about unless you work in it. I was writing and editing for that sector and actually running an event, helping run an event for that sector. And then I went to a trade show in the US where there was 10,000 people. And it was essentially that trade show was about getting American students to spend your summer in Denmark, spend your summer in Estonia. I mean, almost every country was there pitching to get some of that American study abroad budget, which is huge, some big market. And then I was like, wow, okay, this is a huge sector. And then that sort of filters through into going into university, which is, I mean, universities are huge industries and there's a demographic challenge in the UK, Canada, Australia. There's a lot of universities which essentially need to recruit internationally to maintain numbers of students and cash flow. I mean, it's a really interesting business. It's global. So So I probably, that's a long-winded way of answering your question, but I went to this trade show with 10,000 people and I was like, this is a huge industry. It's like a multi-billion dollar industry, huge amounts of stakeholders involved, and it's not really covered very well by the media. So at that time, I could see that you would have some national press who would cover elements of international aid, but there was no media dedicated to international aid as a global business.
You spoke about, at the beginning, about maybe some frustrations and being a female entrepreneur. Talk about some of the significant challenges you faced in the early stages of setting up the business and maybe how you overcame them.
Yeah. So
many.
I was involved with, in a sort of legal dispute with my former boss. Don't know if I need to go into that too much detail, but that was a big challenge.
Yeah.
And we just resolved that the normal way, which was, get involved, close the case. But that, if anything, that made me more determined.
Right.
And then the other big challenge is, honestly, having enough time to build a business when you have small children. So I'm not the only founder. I have two other co-founders who are also women. And I think we were all inspired to build the pie because we liked the idea of having a business which we could run on our own terms, be able to pick the kids up from the nursery if we needed to. But it was a challenge. It definitely was a challenge. And we were basically helped out a lot by either partners or parents, depending on people's situation. Some people can't stop work to pick up. I mean, husbands can't necessarily leave work early. But I was lucky. I had a husband who was a freelancer. But then we also had parents who were all really supportive. So I would say, but that was, those were the only main challenges. I mean, I never felt I had a really well, I had a good name in the sector when I launched this.
Sure.
I felt like I had a huge amount of Godspeed and goodwill around me and what I could do. And it was a time, like I say, when it felt like people were keen to see something fresh and innovative for a global industry, which was not being well served by events or media.
And interesting, we're going to come back and talk about the other founders in the business, Jane and Claire. Lots of people, though, you know, might be watching this, and other guests I've had and other people that have spoken to me about this, you know, might be sitting in a role, they're in a job, they're in a salaried position, they have an idea, but they don't take that leap, right? Because doesn't matter what situation they're in, there's a risk associated with it. What gave you the confidence? You know, was it in the idea itself, in yourself, in your partners? What was it, a combination? What gave you the confidence to say, you know what, I'm going to do this? Where did that moment sort of come from?
So we are now a sort of successful media and events business. We run events in three different countries. The events are an evolution of our core journalistic IP. And I was always really confident in my journalistic abilities. So I think what gave me the confidence is I was absolutely 100% backing myself to be able to uncover the most important stories and build an audience around understanding my scene and sector and delivering content, which is what helps build the community, which helps run the media side, and then you can run events. So I had confidence in myself and my abilities. Mm-hmm. And I guess the other thing I mentioned, I mean, I was sort of a bit frustrated about having no flexible opportunities to work around a family.
Yeah.
And as a woman, when someone says, oh, well, if you can come back 3 days a week, but we'll pay you 60% of your salary, it doesn't really feel very fair when you still have the same knowledge and network.
Sure.
The other thing, I guess, which gave me the confidence was the fact that it became much more affordable to build a fairly good looking website on not a huge amount of money. So previously, in the days of publishing,
sure,
it was a bit more prohibitive, but suddenly you could build a website, set up a newsletter, and then you just need a bit of balls, to be honest. You just gotta go for it.
But that's a good point. Technology has, you know, enabled people, as we know, especially in the publishing world, you know, influencers are essentially now publishers, aren't they? And you can essentially, you've got to do it properly and whatever, but you can essentially start overnight. Thank you. Obviously, the business has gone from strength to strength. You've spoken about the fact that it's now an international business. And this is a big question to answer in a short period of time. But maybe you could just provide, again, I'd like this to be educational, some sort of key strategies, moments that help you scale the business from startup to where it is today.
Yeah. One thing which we did, not necessarily intentionally, but I guess we did expect that to happen, is we did grow our audience globally from the get-go. Okay. So we were covering news, what's happening in the States, what's happening in Australia. We leveraged the network that I already had to be able to write content for those audiences. And so we grew our global audiences from the get-go. But in terms of how we scale the business, we started running awards, which are really, people only enter awards if they care about who's offering the privilege of winning the award. So we waited a few years and then we launched awards. We had a good reputation, so everyone wanted to enter. So that was our first foray into events. That was a big win for us. It became what we like to call the Oscars in international ed. And then the next thing which really helped us, I guess, on that hockey stick curve was actually COVID. Because that forced us to move into webinars and virtual events in a very significant way. We had been planning to do more physical events, and actually COVID happened. We were like, let's just do more virtual events. And it was super successful because we have a hugely deep and valuable CRM. We have, you know, hundreds of thousands of readers all around the world, and we can segment that for clients. So we find ourselves doing unique webinars for North American universities or education agencies in India. We could do specialist events, and we really did a lot of that. That really helped us build cash flow to then go into physical events. We now do sort of classic two-day conferences in the US, the UK and Australia.
Interesting. I mean, you're not the first to say, and actually I had Mike Costain on an earlier episode only a few weeks ago from Lyrical Communications. He runs the Installer Show, and he was saying just that about COVID. And it gave them a pause for thought. Also, they obviously had the community already, but then to serve that community through digital. And it's interesting, out of what obviously was a terrible time for lots of people came, you know, invention. And I think a philosopher more important than me said, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And I guess that was part of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was actually an exciting time for us.
No, thank you. This episode's in collaboration with Collingwood and Piers Byrne, who's the founder of Collingwood, who I believe you know, and the Pies mm-hmm. done some work with. And this question's reference to what you just mentioned, actually, about some of the virtual and hybrid offerings. How are you currently, and how have you been getting your clients to buy into an all year round hybrid offering?
It's sort of part of a strategy of just having annual check-ins and campaign planning with clients. So it's about working really collaboratively with them and moving, which we've done fairly successfully, moving our clients away from of a more piecemeal. I mean, to be fair, it's the fact that we have three global events now. So clients can now come to us and say, what can we do with you for the year? And we can say, we've got this, yep. this. And a lot of their activity will be pinned around regional ambition. So we can add in consultancy, thought leadership positioning, virtual events, but we can add that in. So we're basically just talking around annual campaigns and intent with clients.
Right. And would I be correct in saying, or might be the wrong assumption then, that you have sort of an account-based structure, maybe from a business development or sales perspective? So you're speaking to the client or speaking to the account, you know, about all of what you do, rather than just having an events team or another. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And how did that evolve? Because I guess it probably wasn't, you know, at the beginning, probably wasn't the case. How did that evolve? How do you get staff to sort of buy into that? How do the clients react to that? Or was it a natural evolution of sort of managing customers?
I mean, it definitely requires more sophisticated account management.
Yeah.
But I think international education is a really good industry to be trying that approach in, because everyone is super collaborative. It's a nice industry to work in. Ultimately, you're trying to enable students to have experiences overseas, whether that's, I mean, some of our clients are big testing, like Duolingo, for example. You probably heard of them, but they have a huge testing arm now. But it's all still around facilitating that sort of global mobility piece, and our clients seem very attuned to talking in a very collaborative way. they're all quite innovative. People love saying, let's just do something different. But I don't think it's not been too difficult, but it definitely requires a bit of sophistication on part of our sales team.
Yeah. Piers has a follow-up question, which is, how did you manage to spin out a successful event so quickly without having come from events?
That's a really good question. And actually, there's a bit of a story there, because the first venue we booked for our conference in London was Chelsea Football Club. And it was just before the Ukraine invasion by Russia. And I felt like the events gods were testing us, because we had a lot of universities saying, we are beginning to feel awkward about being seen at an event in Chelsea, because it was still owned by Abramovich at the time. So we took the decision to move venues with a week out. And then actually was it the same year or the following year? We were running our awards event in Guildhall and the Queen died. And we had to move the event in 24 hours. So how did we spin events that successfully? I am going to put a lot of that on Claire's amazing attention to detail. But ultimately, it's events succeed because of their content and their community, like who's coming and what are they going to learn. And I don't know, Dan, about the events you go to, but I go to a lot of conferences which have just become sort of baked in. Or we always go to that conference, but actually they become so baked in, some of them are complacent. The content is maybe dry and people just go there to meet people. Now, obviously, that's a really important reason of going, but if you can make sure that people are confident they're going to meet all the right people and you can put on some killer content and some fresh content. We started bringing international students in and said to our delegates, sit down with them and interview them. And people absolutely loved it. It wasn't, you know, the most radical concept, but it was radical for the events in our sector at the time. And people were coming away saying, that was so meaningful. I work in international student recruitment or partnerships, and I've never actually sat down and spoke to a student from China and heard directly from them on what they found difficult. So we were brilliant with the content and we were really good at, you know, the organizing side of it. Definitely give any difficult job to a busy woman, right?
Hi, I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Just going to take a brief pause to tell you a little bit about the Dan Assel Show headline sponsor, Jonas Event Technology. Jonas Event Technology, or JET, are an award-winning supplier of event registration dedicated to providing event organizers with a seamless registration experience and excellent customer service, as proven by their current NPS score of 71. JET provides a full registration solution for trade shows, exhibitions, and conferences, removing the stress of event registration so that event organizers can focus on making their next event the best yet. Visit jonas.events for more information. And you mentioned CRM and the importance of that a little bit earlier. There's lots of talk about businesses being, you know, data businesses now, you know, first party data being even more important. Talk to me about the journey that the Pi's been on with regards to that, and maybe a few tips or strategies that, you know, again, if people are listening, because it's not easy, right?
I mean, we are basically three female founders and none of us would call ourselves a techie. Yeah. So yeah, it is very important. And actually we hired, his title is chief growth officer, but he's like sort of like a CTO. Yeah. I think it's important to get tech skills in the business, and HubSpot was transformational for us.
Yeah.
So we were using prior CRMs, but in terms of us really being able to really see and track growth and be segmented and granular and geeky about the data and how we're growing and who's engaging with us and HubSpot scores, I mean, that has definitely been massively transformational for us. But you're absolutely right, it's really, really valuable. I mean, there's something out there which is like recognition of brand name, which you can't quantify, and I know we go a long way in that, but you also do want to be able to quantify that, and the best way of doing that is how many people are visiting your website or coming to your events, etc.
Yeah. I want to talk about the journey that you've been on with your business partners, and please bring them to life, Jane and Claire, and really sort of, you know, how you balance your individual strengths and weaknesses. You know, let's be honest, I guess history and other companies and people I've spoken to are littered with, you know, moments where it hasn't always worked, right? Never mind with one other, but with two others. Yeah. It's not as easy to say we're all going to make decisions together. You know, it doesn't always happen that way. So interested to know, and I'm sure you've had your moments. I'm just interested to know how you make it work and when those moments of maybe not conflict, but, you know, a little bit of friction occur. How do you get over that?
Sure. So I'll bring them to life a little bit. We have Jane, who's based in the Wirral near Liverpool, and she is our chief commercial officer. And then we have Claire, who's based in Guildford. So we're not even based in the same cities. And she runs our leads on our events and operations, really. So how do we make it work? As you say, it's a little bit of luck and kismet. I had actually worked with Jane before, so I knew what Jane was like, and I had worked with her. And she's always been in sales. I'd never worked with Claire before, so you never know until you work with people what people are like. But Claire was an absolutely brilliant foil, I guess. Not foil, but addition to Jane and I in terms of our skill sets. Jane is hardcore commercial. I'm also very commercial, but we have this whole journalist and readership, reputation side, and presenting and speaking. And I was, I guess, always the face. And then Claire is absolutely amazing on the detail, but also super versatile. I think she's a great example of you don't need to be pigeonholed by, oh, well, I don't ever. Claire was working in marketing and student recruitment, but she's ended up being an absolutely, and she was doing our finance at one point. I think people can be super versatile, and Claire's definitely a great example of someone who's just like, yeah, well, I'll take that on.
Yeah.
So she's ended up becoming an amazing addition in terms of being the detail person and logistics.
So I guess it's, what you're saying is it's a balance of different skills.
And balance different skill sets. And I think we all appreciate that some of us have, we all have skills that the others don't. But as a threesome, together, it's pretty powerful.
I guess that means all three of you have been on a post-personal growth journey, right? You know, you've got your view before you get into business in isolation, never mind with other people, of what you are. And I guess it changes your character for the better. Talk to me about that journey. You know, do you think you're a different person? Like,
I don't think I am. I think we all became, you know, there's a moment when I quit my job and I was like, this is what I'm doing. And I, going back to your original story about how did you make it, I gave myself a 6 month sort of slush fund of paying a mortgage, and then I was like, I'm gonna have to do something else.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's good to give, you know, look at your realistic opportunities and give yourself a time and think, if it doesn't work, I'll do something else. I think for Jane and Claire, Jane was on maternity leave. Claire agreed to join the business, but actually had another job and was planning on, or pregnant. Yeah, I think she was pregnant. That's right. When we first started talking. So we were all in very sort of different positions right at that point. I think there was a point maybe after a year when we were like, okay, this really does have legs.
Yeah.
And then we all became, I think what I like about Jane and Claire so much is that they're really ambitious as much as me. We're super ambitious for the business. Has it changed me? I don't think it's changed any of us.
Yeah.
But we've just had to come, and we just have to chat less and do more.
I guess also it's an interesting one. Other people, I guess, decide whether you've changed or not.
That's true.
And, you know, it's hard to sort of, I guess, be introspective. We've touched upon
it's been an interesting journey. We've all brought up kids, so I now have teenagers, and we were saying the other day it's been really interesting that they've all grown up hearing this pie chat.
Sure.
But it's a super interesting industry for them to be aware of, because I mean, I'm flying to Australia tomorrow, there's a lot of travel.
Right.
And we took our kids to, we had a 10th anniversary dinner during one of our conferences. It was honestly super moving. Everyone gave us a standing ovation, because it is still more unusual to be fully female founded and led, and it was amazing for our kids to see that. So it has been an interesting journey to be on and see our kids grow up through.
I'd like to touch upon that a bit more, actually. You know, you've got three female founders. Have you had to deal with any sort of stereotypes, gender bias in your personal journey and the journey with Claire and Jane as a business, or is that just coming from a man? Is that a stupid question? And the answer is yes.
I mean, it's a question you have to unpick a little. I think what I've realised is, no. I mean, a simple answer is no. I don't really feel like there were situations when the door was shut in my face because I was a woman. I also grew up with, I'm a triplet with two brothers, so I feel super comfortable around guys.
Yeah.
But I have realized that there are certain people who lean in a bit, little bit more. And I've realized that, and I think that's possibly just natural. So there'll be sort of certain female CEOs who will lean in a little closer and say, Amy, this is, you know, I want to do this, or, you know, and I just think there's an inevitable sort of commercial closeness that you might build up with someone who is in a similar role to you, who's a female CEO. Sure. And that's why the more female CEOs you have, the better. So I guess everyone has their real allies, don't they? Some of mine are men, but some of them at mine are definitely female in the sector who are, and you're all cheering for each other's success. And I notice that sometimes. I notice that. But sure. No, I've never felt like, and if, okay. Never felt like there's been opportunities we haven't been able to avail ourselves of. Actually, there is one example, but generally no. And then in the early days, I definitely was getting asked to speak on panels because I was a woman. I'm very aware of
that. Can you enlighten me about that one example you just referenced? I can't let that go.
I will give you an example, because we also have a recruitment executive search business, which we're really good at. We've been doing that for 12 years.
Yeah.
And I think it's an amazing sort of skill, which we still don't shout enough about. But if someone comes to us and says, I need someone in the Philippines, or I need someone in Vietnam, we've just done a role in Vietnam, who can understand international student recruitment, we can normally deliver that person within 5 to 6 weeks. And we have this huge network. And what I would say is that's the only time I sometimes feel frustrated, because I'll have a male CEO who says to me, that sounds amazing, Amy. Yeah, we'll definitely use you for that hire. I'll just speak to my investors. And that is one of the bits of the business world where I think it is almost 100% male dominated. And then a couple of times I've had people come back to me to say, I'm really sorry, but my investors want us to use X agency. And I'm like, that is where, you know, that is where the sort of male old boys club network is possibly still working. But that's the only bit that's okay. Investor level. Yeah.
Okay. And what measures do you think are necessary to create a more inclusive and supportive environment for women in business? Because you've spoken about your story, but others have told me slightly different. I guess it depends what industry, as you said as well. Do you think there's anything that needs to be done that could be done?
Well, COVID actually helped, I think, in terms of people being able to work flexibly and from home more. I do think that really helps empower women in particular who have children, because there is a certain... Do you have children, Dan, or not?
I do. I've got two girls. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah, it's a very relevant question for you.
It is. That's what I'm interested in.
I mean, someone still has to take the kids to school, right? I mean, there is a certain amount of work which is just time taking them to bus stop or school, etc. Someone has to do that. And whereas plenty of guys are really keen to do that, if they have a job which requires them to be in the city at 7 a.m, they cannot do that. Yeah. So practical expectations around people being able to be flexible is helping a lot. And that we've seen a lot more of that from COVID. We always had a work from home 2 days a week policy from 2011, which was considered hugely radical then. But that's, I mean, one example I can think of.
Okay. And as a leader, Amy, what principles guide you in managing your team and making business decisions?
I think this is a good question, because we still only have 28 people working for us, so we're quite a small team. Yeah. And I know this would get more challenging as you keep scaling. But we all have really good personal relationships with everyone in our team, and I think we try and lead by example. And I also think at some point I might have to stop doing that. I can do everything which is required in the business, but as you go, you don't need to be able to do that. And that's already, you know, happening. I think we're very female in our leadership style. We're very approachable. Oh yeah, sure, we can have an hour long chat about that. I think, we're just very approachable and lead from the front and are very available. That's our management style. And I think the challenge is, as we keep scaling, is there will be points, times when there are people, I mean, we're already getting to that point where there are some people I don't really know very well at all who are working for our business. But that's when it's about mission statements, values, ensuring you've got key senior team below you who can really instill that and understand that. And we have done that fairly well, I think. And we've hired such an amazing group of people, most of whom, I think, well, all of whom have really embodied what we stand for, which is, you know, in the freedom of independent media and excitement of global business. Yeah, I think we've sure. had a good team of people who all seem quite entrepreneurial, basically.
Sure. And that's a good segue into one of the final questions, which, what's the long-term vision for, I say long-term, obviously you've been doing it for quite a while now, but I guess the next sort of, everyone talks about the next 3 to 5 years, and where do you see yourself in that? Because, you know, it is different going from 5 people to 28 to 50 to 100. You have to keep going and growing on that journey. It's not for everyone. And I've had lots of people on here that exited businesses once they got to a certain size and so on and so forth. What's, I guess, as I said, the vision for the business and for yourself?
So the vision is, and Jane, Claire and I sort of checking up with each other regularly on this, but the vision is we still feel like we've got a growth story to tell. I don't think I'll be doing this in 20 years, but right now we still think we've got a growth story to tell, and we're considering another event in another region. I mean, it's such a global business. There's such a lot of ongoing opportunity. So the vision is consolidation and growth for the next 3 years. And beyond that, we need to check in with each other and
sure,
and see what happens after that. But we see a lot of opportunity. I mean, there's a lot, there really is. We're perfectly placed as a business with sort of global lens and global network to keep growing.
What advice would you give to aspiring entrepreneurs looking to start a business? So if there's anyone listening to this, what would you say to them?
Actually, I was interviewed by my university.
Yeah.
And I gave this same answer, which is build a network. I think building your network is the single most valuable thing you can do if you want to be an entrepreneur. Whatever sector you want to work in, you will ultimately succeed based on the number of potential business connections you have and your ability to explain to them what you're trying to achieve and how you can help them achieve what they want to and what their goals are. It's all about the network. So I think my sort of journalistic origins really, really helped because I had a huge network and profile when we started the pie. And I think that would be my single best piece of advice is you have to work it on LinkedIn, go to industry events. I mean, ultimately you have to be able to look someone in the eye and say, this is what I'm doing and this is why it's great.
Sure.
Right.
Amy, thank you so much for your time. We could have gone on for a long time, not a lot longer, I'm sure. I wish you, Jane and Claire, every success.
Thank you so much.
With the pie. And thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Dan.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. The Dan Astle Show is grateful for the support of headline sponsor Jonas Event Technology and event industry supporters Terrapin and 19 Group. Be notified first about new episodes by following me on Apple Podcasts and Spotify platforms and by subscribing to my YouTube channel. Search Dan Astle.